Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, November 9th, 2017, and with me today I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome. I'm glad you're here. And John Martellaro, I'm so glad you are here as well. I hope you're doing well.
I am doing well. Pleasure to be here. Hey, Andrew. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
And it's great to have both of you here. I think this is the first time I've had the two of you together on the show.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So this is going to be a great episode.
Oh, I know. This is one that's going to win a podcast award, I'm sure. I don't know what podcast award. We'll win one. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Eero, the Wi-Fi mesh network system that I'm using in my place. I'll talk about them in just a bit. But first, we need to talk about Apple and AR headsets, because there's a report that came out yesterday that says that Apple has a team that's working on an augmented reality headset of some sort. Inside Apple, there are, it sounds like, a few hundred people that are on Apple's augmented reality team. These are the people that gave us ARKit, and they're working on other augmented reality software and hardware things inside Apple. And so there's a report that came out of Bloomberg that says that the progress Apple's making says that they're on track for possibly a release of this new product in 2020, and it'll be running
just like the autonomous car, right?
Yes, just like the
autonomous which was scheduled car. For 2020.
Yeah, I think we'll see a AR headset before we'll see the autonomous car now.
Oh yeah.
So this headset, what we know. And when I say what we know, I have to use that a little bit loosely because we don't know until Apple actually shows us something. But the word we're getting is that this is going to have some serious horsepower in it. So it has its own display instead of relying on your phone for the visual part, which means it'll have its own cameras. And Apple is working on a separate version of their operating system called ROS that will run on this. And R for reality, so it's reality OS. And I'm curious, what do you guys think about this?
I think this is something that Apple should do, but they should do it in the right time. And the photo that you used in the article reminded me that these monster face gear things have a bad reputation.
Yeah, I chose Apple, that photo specifically.
Yeah, it makes me think all of a sudden, you know, Apple's going to do this at the right time when the technology matures and they can do something elegant and the headset can be smaller and cooler and you don't look like a real dork. And there's this sort of a stigma associated with these giant 1 pound things you strap on your head. I have a feeling Apple wants to take a different approach to that.
I would certainly hope so. There's augmented reality and virtual reality space that's in Boulder. It's right on Pearl Street Mall. So if you're in Boulder, you can go check it out. It's like straight across from the courthouse. And it's free. So I've gone in and played around with the technology they have on several occasions, and it's really cool. And it's really not something I am interested in owning on any level right now, because you are strapping this uncomfortable, giant, heavy box to your face. And I found that even though they tell you, oh, you don't need to wear glasses with them, I have to wear my glasses, or I cannot see the screens inside these headsets. So they're clunky, they're cumbersome, they're uncomfortable, and now you're disconnected from the rest of the world, which I don't think is where Apple's going, because that, you know, that's more the VR thing. So what I'm hoping is that they've come up with something that's comfortable, lightweight, doesn't look ridiculous on your face, and leaves your vision open, so you're doing true augmented reality, where you're superimposing content on which you're already seeing, as opposed to virtual reality, where you're just replacing everything with a new image.
Yeah, and Tim Cook said during the earnings report that he liked augmented reality because it connects you to the real world instead of divorces you from the real world. He was pretty certain that that was a key feature of augmented reality.
You know, Brian Chaffin, he talks about Cook code, which is a term he came up with, and the idea is that Tim Cook speaks in Cook code, so he tells us what Apple's going to do, and he's very clear about what Apple's going to do, but he does it in a way that we may not realize that's what he's doing in the moment, and I think his comments about augmented reality are Cook code. And what he's doing is telling us, hey, yeah, we are working on this, and it's a real thing, and it's going to be cooler than what you can get today.
Yeah, I remember the first cell phone. It was the size of a brick and weighed 2 pounds. Remember that?
Oh, I do remember those. Yeah, it had the little
like 5,000
carrying $5,000. Case.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and it was, like, stupid expensive to use, and, yeah.
I think my perception is Tim Cook wants us to look back on the good old days when we strapped these giant things on our face and look what Apple has.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. So now, Andrew, I'm curious, have you messed around with virtual reality and augmented reality very much?
I haven't really done anything in VR much. Like last year, I ordered one of those do-it-yourself Google Cardboard kits.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it was cool, but it's not really something that I would stick with unless, you know, the technology gets really good.
Yep. I think you just nailed something right there, which is it's cool and it's fun right now, but it's not something you really want to stick with because it's awkward, it's cumbersome, and there are just so many reasons or excuses to not use it that it's hard to like really get into that. And I have one of the ViewMaster VR headsets, and you know, you just plug your iPhone into it or your Android phone, whatever, and it's cool, and I love playing with it, but that's all I do is play with it. And it's something I use for a few minutes and then set aside because I get tired of holding this thing up to my face.
I do like the idea of an AR headset because when you're using AR on your phone, like you said, it gets kind of a pain to hold it up in front of your face all the time. But I think Apple's biggest hurdle is making the idea of wearing one of these headsets socially acceptable, especially when you're out in public.
Yeah. Google didn't have much luck with that with Google Glass. And I think part of that was because it just felt creepy. People weren't trusting Google very much by that point anyhow. And then some of the people that were acting either specifically on Google's behalf as spokespeople or were like media that got a hold of these things and became spokespeople just through their actions, they were doing stuff that was kind of creepy. And I'm thinking about the shower picture specifically.
Yeah. Didn't they call those people glass holes?
Yes, they did.
And that's not something that Apple wants. So I'm guessing that whatever Apple comes out with is going to be much more elegant than what we're seeing with VR gear today. It's going to be something that looks less, for lack of a better term, techno nerd than Google Glass, and is going to be presented to us in a way where it doesn't come across quite so creepy.
Couple observations. Mm-hmm. First, I would expect that Apple wouldn't be alone, and that thanks to industrial intelligence gathering, there'll be other companies who will be racing to equal what Apple does. So I doubt if Apple will be alone in this. Second, we don't tend to think of VR as man-machine interface or bionics or melding mm-hmm. of human and hardware. But, you know, it's not exactly an implant, but on your face that way, it is the beginning of a really elegant man-machine interface. And third, it occurs to me that there are, as with Google Glass, social implications with this. People who are benignly and elegantly wearing these devices who will be more aware of their surroundings, able to make better decisions in ways we haven't discovered yet. And there'll be sort of a have and have not attitude about, you know, people walking around without this device being somehow disenfranchised, disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. So that's some things to consider.
All right. I think I can sum that up beautifully by saying it sounds to me like you just described the iPhone from Futurama. Shut up and take my money.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Eero, the Wi-Fi mesh network company and product. And here's the deal. I've been using Eero since Gen 1, and Gen 2 is out. And so I went from a Wi-Fi network that I couldn't imagine improving on to one where I was surprised at how much better it became, which is saying something, because I loved my Eero first gen, and I had no complaints about it whatsoever. But then second gen came along, and what it did was it changed the satellite units for the Wi-Fi mesh that it does into what they now call the Eero Beacon. So instead of taking up more counter space or bookshelf space or whatever, and it's in this long cord, it's a little block that just plugs right into an outlet, and even has a little nightlight built in that you can program, which is kind of fun. And so what you get with the new Eero Wi-Fi mesh system is a third 5 gigahertz radio, plus you get a Thread radio for those low power Internet of Things devices that need to use that connection. And so now you've got this tri-band system. It's like twice as fast as the first gen Eero, and it's really efficient at managing all the data that's going through your network. So what you end up with is a system that just kind of spreads Wi-Fi everywhere for you, and you don't have bottlenecks at all. And I've been doing my best to try and make my Eero second gen choke on data, and I just can't do it. It just works beautifully. And one of the things that I loved was that when we started hearing about the crack WPA2 security flaw, they had a patch out so quick that when I went to check my Eero in the iPhone app and see what its firmware version number was, it had already updated itself with the patch for crack. That was really cool. So this is a really cool system. I love mine. I'd love for everyone else to be able to get their hands on Wi-Fi that works as good as mine. So what you guys need to do is head over to the Eero site, and that's Eero.com, and then pick out the Eero system that works for you. So I have the one that has the primary base station and two beacons, and I can actually walk a block away when I'm heading over to my favorite pub, and still hit my network. Crazy. But anyhow, go to the Eero website, Eero.com, pick out the system that you want, and at checkout, pick overnight shipping, and then enter the special code TDO. That's going to give you overnight shipping in the United States or Canada. So Eero.com, pick out the system that you want, and then overnight shipping and TDO for that special code, and get your overnight shipping, USA and Canada, for free. Thank you, Eero, for being our sponsor. All right. So the other thing I want to talk about today is a listener comment that we got. And so this goes back to Tuesday show. So that would be the 7th. And so Brian, he was not Brian Chaffin, different Brian. Hi, Brian. He was listening to the show, and and this was the episode where I was talking about Face ID and Apple Pay and how Apple Pay with Face ID was just a complete fail for me. And so here's what he had to say. Just listened to the 11.7 edition of TMO Daily, and it was interesting hearing about your experience with Apple Pay on the new iPhone X. I just used Apple Pay yesterday on my new iPhone X and found it to be very fast and easy to use. It turns out it's much closer to how Apple Pay is initiated on the Apple Watch. And then he goes on to explain exactly how he's doing what he's doing with Apple Pay and how it's working for him. And then he also says that he thinks that we're doing great work on the show. So thank you, Brian, because it's always nice to get feedback from people. And when you like the show, that feedback's even nicer. So here's the deal. What Brian has been doing is double-clicking the side button on his iPhone X and looking at the camera. So he's doing Face ID immediately, and then he puts his phone down to the NFC checkout credit card reader thing at the store, and it's worked flawlessly for him every time. I was complaining because I couldn't get the angles right, and I'd hold my phone down and do the double press thing, and finally just have to type in my passcode to do a transaction, and I was just really disappointed. Well, here's the deal. It turns out that I was holding it wrong, so to speak. And I just needed to work on my technique. So what I was doing was trying to keep my phone in physical contact with the credit card reader all the time. When I changed my method, which is very similar to what Brian is doing, I take my phone out of my pocket, I double press that side button, which brings me into the Apple Pay mode. I'm now, by this point, already holding my phone near the card reader, but I don't touch it anymore. I don't touch the card reader. And once it I can tell.
And the phone no longer has to be at a special angle to your face because you've already authenticated.
No, I haven't authenticated yet. But once my phone has started talking to the card reader, then I just tip it back up. And it reads my face.
Oh, okay. So at first it does the NFC and then it does the authentication with Face ID?
But you can do it the other way also. You can do the authentication and hold the reader down, which is what Brian is doing. And that works perfectly as well. So there's good and bad in this. The good is that there are multiple ways to use Face ID with Apple Pay effectively and reliably every single time. I love that. Here's the bad part. If you're trying to do this and you don't have it right at the beginning, which means you haven't learned Apple's ways, then it's very frustrating. And if it could be frustrating for me, someone that actually dreams about Apple products because I do this so much, then I can see where that would be really frustrating for other people as well.
Gee, if only there was a way for Apple to produce a video to show us how to do this.
If only. Gee.
If only.
Yeah.
So you're saying that when you do Apple Pay, you don't have to hold the phone in a weird position anymore?
Right. So, yeah. So I can just double tap that side button, get the phone near enough to the reader that it does the link up, and then just make sure that I kind of move the phone around so that it's pointed towards my face and I'm looking at the camera, and it's done.
Okay, but it has to be in portrait mode.
It has to be in portrait mode. Face ID does not work in landscape mode.
Interesting.
Yeah. So now it's turned out to be easier than I expected and very reliable, but it took me several days of trying to buy stuff before I had this right. But then the other thing is, since I was so obsessed with trying to learn about all this Face ID stuff and techniques, I found something the other day that made me think that anyone that says Face ID is a stupid and pointless thing has never been cold. And here's the deal. I was out walking along Pearl Street Mall a couple days ago, and it was snowing. And it was 27, 28 degrees Fahrenheit outside. And I wanted to take some photos. So I'm wearing gloves. I have a stocking cap on and
-2 Celsius.
Yeah, so -2 Celsius, and I want to take photos. Well, with my iPhone 7, that meant I had to take my gloves off so that I could swipe on the screen and, you know, and do all the stuff that I want to do to take a photograph. With the iPhone 10, all I had to do was take my phone out of the pocket, out of my pocket, and I was wearing gloves that do the touch thing right through them. So all I had to do was tap on the camera button, and now I'm taking photos with my gloves on. And then when I got into Starbucks, I didn't even bother to take my gloves off because I was able to use Face ID to do all of the authentication and pay for my drink without having to do, like, basically anything else. And it was amazing. So what I learned was, if you have an iPhone 10 with Face ID set up and you live in a cold environment, you're going to love this because you can just leave your gloves on.
Take off your ski mask, though.
Yeah, take your ski mask off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, it was just fantastic. So anyhow, over the course of a week, I have become an absolute lover of Face ID instead of someone that's felt like, yeah, this is fine and it will improve. What it took was me learning how it works. So, Brian, thank you for your comment. And I'm glad that Face ID and Apple Pay is working perfectly for you. It is for me now too. And listeners, I'm so glad that you guys write in and give me comments and feedback because I just love that. And sometimes you guys teach me things too. And just like Brian did, I didn't realize you could authenticate with Face ID before you did your Apple Pay transaction. So that's kind of a cool thing. And we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
And Andrew, thank you for being here as well.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great to have both of you on. And listeners, I'm so glad that you have joined us. And if you have comments for me, I'm easy to get a hold of. You can do it on Twitter, @TMODaily. You can do it by email, observations@macobserver.com. And of course, you can leave comments in the show notes for each episode. And I will check all those places to see what you have to say. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Eero for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, Eero.com. Use the special code TDO at checkout to get free overnight shipping and get yourself the same awesome Wi-Fi mesh system that I have set up in my place. And we will see everyone again tomorrow.